By that time, he threw it over. He couldn't react in time, was heading towards second. The 1-1. Outside of the zone. 4-1. 2 balls, a strike with one down. Burnett fires in the 2-1. Inside, 4-1. 3-1 count with one out. Burnett fires the 3-1. That ball hooked off, fouled right side. Count runs full, 3-2. So this was the exact same situation as Brocious, but Burnett threw a ball. So this time, can perhaps he throw a strike? Burnett looks and fires the payoff. A swing and a drive that's heading towards right center field. Running after it is Johnson. Reaches out to his left. Makes the grab for two down. So this brings up Colin Summerhill, the first baseman. Strikeout today. No hits on 3 at-bats. Two down for the Raptors, bottom of the eighth. They lead 4-0. As Burnett deals in the first strike, 0-1. No balls, one strike and two down. Burnett will come set. A swing and a line drive that drops in before Johnson can get to it in center. And a base hit for Summerhill. He'll get to first. So Evan Orzek, 0-2 today, but he drew a walk. So he'll step in. Pittsburgh's up to 5 hits in comparison to the Raptors' 6. But they have committed an error. 2 down. Burnett has his eyes over on Summerhill at first. He delivers in the first offering. Alixo darts it over to second to Broussard and gets him in time. What a tag out from this Raptors defense. We head to the top of the ninth. They lead 4-0. We'll be back in a moment here on WFHR.
You have been listening to Raptors Baseball here on WFHR. Brought to you by Wisconsin River Orthopedics, Gamber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Aspirus Health, Solaris, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Delta Dental of Wisconsin, SNS Distributing, El Cafe, Edward Jones Sky Manning, Comfort Air Heating Cooling Fireplaces, Chris Inda Next Home Partners, and Dixon Gun Shop. Stream every game all season long at WFHR.com or through the Civic Media app.
Who makes insurance simple? That's easy. Delta Dental of Wisconsin. So if you ask, what company encourages you to use your benefits for regular preventive care? Or who provides quick service online or by phone? Which insurance offers access to the largest provider networks? Or who helps you save money when you need more than a checkup? The answer's the same. Definitely Delta Dental. For dental and vision insurance made simple, choose Delta Dental of Wisconsin and Delta Vision today.
If you have sustained an injury or have joint pain, you may need Wisconsin River Orthopedics. After a thorough examination, you may be prescribed therapy. Wisconsin River Orthopedics features their own in-house therapy center, staffed by experienced occupational and physical therapy professionals. If you need surgery for your ailment from one of their 4 surgeons, you may need therapy afterwards. Call 715-424-1881 or go to WROinstitute.com. 715-424-1881. Relieving pain and restoring lives.
Now, let's get back to exciting Raptors baseball here on WFHR.
Top of the ninth inning, Raptors 4, Pittsburgh 0, and Shane Taylor, the guy responsible for 3 runs today, hit a 3-run shot in the 7th. To right field, will now step in. So the Raptors have Taylor, Haligzo, and Jensen. Well, Taylor, Jensen, and Conniff. So Haligzo, his day is done. Jensen will pinch it for him. So Taylor, the left-hander, on a new pitcher for the Pits Bitters, Aaron Forrest will step in. Forrest has appeared in five games, a 2-0 record, 12 and two-thirds innings of work, allowing 10 hits and 11 strikeouts from Peoria, Arizona, from Doan College, and fires in the first curveball in for a strike, 0-1. So Pitts Bitters trail 4-0. Rafters have held them scoreless, the 0-1, and Taylor swings and pulls a ball out right into the glove of Prout in left field, one down. So Levi Jensen will step in. Instead of Hogan Haligzo, he's pinch hitting for him here in the top of the ninth. Jensen, 6 hits on 56 at-bats, 7 runs. He's been struck out 17 times for a 107 batting average. As the first offering comes in low, 1-0. One ball, no strikes. One down, top of the ninth. Rafters have out-hit the Pitts Bitters 6-5 as Jensen sees a strike in 1-1. One down, the 1-1. Swing and a ground ball that stays fair on the third baseline. Miller reaches out after it, throws it on a two-hop bounce, and gets him in time. So once again, Glenn Miller making outstanding plays there at third. Gets Jensen out for the second out. And this will bring up Chris Conniff, bottom of the order, 1-for-2 today. And he drew a walk. So Forrest will fire and find the strike zone, 0-1. No balls, one strike. Two down. The 0-1. And just low of the zone for a ball, 1-1. One ball, one strike. The 1-1, Conniff swings and grounds a ball into the shortstop, Traficante. Throws a bullet over to the first for the third out. So a 1-2-3 inning for the Pitts Bitters. Do the Rafters have three more outs in them? Find out next here as we head to the bottom of the ninth here on WFHR.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
Bottom of the ninth, we go. The Rafters lead 4-0 as Julian Tristan will step on the mound. The fifth pitcher and the final pitcher of the night for the Rafters. 9 games with a 1-1 record, 5 saves, 11 innings of work, and 11 strikeouts. As he'll face Evan Orzech. So stepping in is Tristan. He'll come set and fire in the first offering. Tristan looking for his 6th save of the season. He's a guy that's been in these situations many times. The 1-0 as Orzech swings and hooks a ball that pulls on the left field line. Gallison running after it, not making the catch in time. Heading for second is Orzech. And that's a leadoff double for the pitch hitters. This crowd is lively here. They're down 4-0, but everybody standing up, clapping, cheering on their team. So this brings up Tyler Minnick. 1 hit on 3 at-bats. Each team with 6 hits. At second is Orzech. Tristan fires in a swing and a ball popped into the air into the third baseman, Taylor, and makes an easy grab for one down. Fans were up on their feet yelling. Thought he was going to drop that ball, not Shane Taylor. He's a great infielder, a very experienced guy. One down, Erickson is due up. At second is Orzech. Tristan sets and fires. And below the zone for a ball, 1-0. Count. Tristan fires inside for a ball, 2-0. Each team with 6 hits, but the Rafters 4 runs. It came in the top of the 7th. The 2-0, and once again, low and inside. So 3 straight balls. As Levi Jensen going to have a word with his pitcher, Tristan. 3-0 count. And Taylor as well. In the infield, just having a word with his pitcher and catcher. One down. Tristan way down in the count, 3-0. Cooper Erickson 0-for-3 today. The DH from Wofford, the 3-0, and finds the strike zone in 3-1. The 3-1 again, and inside for ball number 4. So Erickson will take first. Orzech at second. And this brings up Cole Prout. 1-for-2 today. He also drew a walk. So a lot of momentum right now for the pitch hitters. Rafters have to halt this. Tristan will come set. Fire in. A swing and a ground ball that goes in between first and second. As the bases are juiced now, runners were going to decide to get home. But now, here come Traverse City. Camden Traficante, batting in the 9 hole, has not gotten a hit tonight. So now for the Rafters, they're going to have to play their best infield baseball of the night. Prout at first. At second is Erickson. At third is Orzech. As the first pitch comes in for a ball. Tying run at the plate. One down. The 1-0. Way down low for a ball. 2-0. 2 balls, no strikes. One down. Pitch hitters have out hit the Rafters 7-6 now. The 2-0. Outside for Tristan. 3 straight balls. One more ball away from breaking the score open for the pitch hitters and getting them on the board. Tristan set serves the 3-0 and inside for ball number 4. So getting home is Orzech. Now it's 4-1. Rafters are just going to have to stay calm here. Now the time runs at first. Jack Crichton, one hit on four at bats with a strikeout. As Tristan sets and serves in for a ball, 1-0. At first is Traficante, second is Prout, third is Erickson. Tristan will come set. He'll kick, fire the 1-0, and seize the zone in for a strike, 1-1. A base hit would be detrimental toward this Raptors team. They lead 4-1. One down. Tristan sets, kicks, winds the 1-1. Check swing didn't come fully across. Four ball, 2-1. Crichton with already a hit today. A 2-1 count. Tristan fires. And inside again, 3-1. So now, if he throws one more ball, another runner gets home. Traficante at first, Prout at second. As they swing in a ground ball over to Conniff. He dumps it over to Broussard at second for the second out. But getting home was Erickson. 4-2 now. Prout advances to third. Getting the first is Crichton. So only the Raptors need one more out. Parker Brocious will step in. Two down. Two runs so far for the Pits Bitters. Raptors lead 4-2. Two outs now as Brian Dyer, coach for the Raptors, assistant coach, stepping out on the mound. And so is the infield. Clapping on Tristan, patting him on the back and saying, hey, look, we just got to get one out. There is a lively group of young kids, young adults, I should say, on this right side, right near the dugout. They definitely look like college kids. A very excited bunch. Trash talking the Raptors. But hey, look at it. Raptors, they've given up two runs. All you got to do is just get one more out. That's it. And this game is over. Doesn't matter how you get it. 4-2 game, and now Josh Rebent calling in his team. So Parker Brocious, 0-3 today with two strikeouts. Julian Tristan on the mound. At first stands Crichton. Third is Prout. Tristan sets, serves, and finds a zone in for a strike, 0-1. We've seen Tristan at times with his back against the wall and absolutely deliver the 0-1 outside for a ball, 1-1. One ball, one strike, two down. Tristan set, serves the 1-1 and fouled on the right side. Crichton was taking second. But now 1-2. Potentially the final strike, the final out of the night. Raptors can end this Michigan road trip with a W. Four runs for them in the top of the seventh. The Pits Bitters have gotten back with two of their own. But potentially the final strike for Tristan. He sets, serves the 1-2. Swing and a ball. Hit into left field. Running after it. It bounces before Gallison can get to it. One run scores. And Crichton is heading home from third. The play is not at the plate. Two-run score. It's 4-4. Wow. Just like that, a four-run inning here in the bottom of the ninth. And now we're tied at 4-4. That could have done it. That could have been it. But now the Raptors face potentially losing tonight. But two down. Wow. Glenn Miller will step in as Tristan fires in for a strike. It took a weird bounce in front of Gallison. 0-1 count. Tristan serves. And outside for a ball, 1-1. It was a 4-0 game. And now four runs. Brocia stands at second. The 1-1. Swinging a ball. Hit into right field. That just goes foul. That sure enough would have done it. That would have been it right there. One ball, two strikes. Everybody getting up on their feet here in Turtle Creek Stadium. That second is Brocious. The 1-2, swinging a ball skied up into shallow center. And Johnson reaches out, makes the grab for the third out. But four runs for Traverse City. They force extra innings. We head to the top of the 10th inning here on WFHR.
Over the Back Fence has moved. Tune in on Saturdays at 11 a.m. for an hour of water cooler talk, items you're looking to buy or sell, upcoming events in central Wisconsin, or just whatever. Join the conversation by calling 715-424-2600, and we'll go over the back fence at its new day and time, Saturdays at 11 a.m. It's the audio community bulletin board that comes to you. We'll see you there.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Let's get back to the ballpark and more Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball on WFHR.
Top of the 10th, we go. Extra innings are here as Ty Johnson will lead off. So Chris Conniff stands at second. And that's the rule in extra innings. A runner has to start at second base. As Forrest will deliver in, Johnson throws bunt as Conniff gets caught in a pickle, dives in to third, and a ball gets past him. He's running third, heading for home, and the Rafters lead here in the top of the 10th. Wow, what about it? Would you look at that? Massive here for the Rafters. Wow. Chris Conniff doing it at all and getting a big run. Rafters lead 5-4 just on the first pitch. The 1-0 up and away. Two balls and no strikes. The 2-0, a swing on a shallow ground ball over to Miller at third, darts it over to first. In time, but how about it? A run from Chris Conniff. It was a pitch that came in. Conniff got caught in the pickle, darts over to third, a ball passed into the dugout, a wild throw, and then Conniff races home. So the first pitch comes in, swinging a ball, hit into left field, and that just goes foul. Nearly from Jack Basir. But the Rafters have regained the lead here 5-4. Wild game here in Traverse City. And a game that you felt as a Raptors fan that they won. You know, four runs in the top of the seventh. Four runs for Traverse City in the bottom of the ninth. But Wisconsin Rapids leads the 0-1 outside for a ball, 1-1. One ball, one strike, and one out. The 1-1 just outside of the zone, 2-1. Two balls, one strike. Setting and serving. Swinging a ground ball over to Miller at third. Fields it up in the glove and throws a bullet to first for the second out. So this brings up Brendan Bobo. 1-for-4 today with a run and two strikeouts. So Conniff able to lift this Raptors team in front. They've been out hit from Traverse City 8-6. As Forrest will step and serve. Bobo flies it out left side, 0-1. Incredible heart and incredible toughness from this Raptors team. If they can find themselves winning this game, a lot of baseball to be played. The 0-1 from Forrest. And outside of the zone, 1-1. One ball, one strike. Forrest again lifts his leg and serves down low. And it comes in for a strike. Bobo can't believe it. 1-2. Two down. Forrest will come set. Fire the 1-2. And left edge of the zone. Four ball, 2-2. Two balls, two strikes. The 2-2. And once again, pulled away. 3-2. Full count with two down. Raptors lead 5-4. Brendan Bobo, the left-hander. And the Cal State Fullerton product. The 3-2 from Forrest. And right down the plate for strike number three. Bobo saw it late, but the Raptors get a run. They lead 5-4. We head to the bottom of the 10th inning here on WFHR.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My Grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my Grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough. But if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Wisconsin Rapids Raptors Baseball on WFHR.
Bottom of the 10th, we go Raptors 5, Pittsbitters 4, as another pitcher coming in for the bullpen staff for Wisconsin Rapids, Sidney Ferry from Paw Paw, Michigan, and a University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. So a guy that's looking to get the save And standing at second is Miller. Up to bat is Summerhill. Four runs for the pitch hitters in their last time up to bat. So Ferry has allowed 10 hits and 6 strikeouts as he serves in the first pitch for a ball, 1-0. So now it's Ferry's time. A runner at second. The 1-0. And clips the right edge of the zone inside. 1-1. So a Michigan native. One of three Michigan natives on this team. And the 1-1 on a breaking ball. Just an up out outside of the zone. 2-1. Two balls a strike. Ferry looks over at second. And then once again, serves a 2-1. Swinging a ball fouled off right side. 2-2. So it would be big here for the Rafters if they can find a way to get a double play, because that really puts the pitch hitters in a tough spot. But just getting one out at a time and not forcing this runner to get home. The 2-2 just outside and low. Jensen can't believe it. Count runs full at 3-2. Tying run at second with Miller. Colin Summerhill, 1-for-4 today. Ferry looks in. He bends down. He'll come set. Looks over at second. Kicks, winds, and fires a 3-2. Swinging a ball. Well hit into right center field. Running after it is Johnson, who reaches out, makes the grab. Tagging up to third is Miller. So one down, the tying run 90 feet away. Miller at third. And this brings up Evan Orzek, who's got a hit on three at-bats with a run. Johnson able to make the catch, but unfortunately, Miller gets to third. So Orzek with a run scored today as Ferry fires. We had a ground ball, line drive that goes right into the glove of Broussard. And now it's two outs. Broussard looks over at third. The infield was shifted in. And now Tyler Minnick will step in. So now the Rafters, if they can find a way to get this last out, it's over. Minnick 1-for-4 today. Ferry will look in. Set in fire. And clips the right edge inside of the zone. For a strike, 0-1. Incredible heart from this team. If they can see a way to win this game. Two down, the 0-1. And down low and away for a ball, 1-1. One ball, one strike with two down. Ferry looks over at third. He'll come set again. The 1-1 home, swinging a ground ball that goes up the middle. Broussard is able to field it, whips it over to first, inside to Gurvich for the third out. That will do it. The Rafters find a way to steal a game here in Traverse City. 5-4 is your score. Wisconsin Rapids, what a victory. Garrett Broussard making an absolute unbelievable play. That will do it. What a win. Four runs for them in the top of the seventh. They give up four runs in the bottom of the ninth. Miller couldn't get home because the out was made at first from Garrett Broussard. What about that? Just an unbelievable play. A team with a lot of heart tonight, giving up four runs in the bottom of the ninth. And all the momentum was on Traverse City's side. Rafters found a way to get a run home. Chris Conniff gets home from second on a passed ball, a wild ball. And then the defense just comes up big. The tying run was 90 feet away with one out. Broussard gets the last two outs of the night. What a way to win this game and to end this road trip. Rafters 5, Traverse City 4. They were out hit 8-6. But probably, in my opinion, the best victory of the year. For a team to be up 4-0 get four runs. You feel that, hey, look, this game is over. They're just going to have to see it out. But Traverse City comes from the dead, gets four runs. And then from there, the momentum left their side. They didn't have much life in that dugout. But in the 10th, getting a run from Conniff. And then the defense, just wow. Garrett Broussard, hats off to you. Hats off to everybody. Shane Taylor hits a three-run shot in the top of the 7th. But finding a way to win in a game where Traverse City really put them against their heels. But what a win to end this road trip here in Michigan. The Rafters will be back home at Witterfield tomorrow night as they take on the Lakeshore Chinooks at 6:05. But for everybody at Wisconsin Rapids, for the players, coaches, and staff, for everybody at the studio at WFHR, my name is Joey Fier saying so long from Traverse City. We'll see you tomorrow in Wisconsin Rapids. Good night, everybody.
Saturdays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Certainly felt nervous because just the way that it was framed was framed as if it was looking at whether courts at the state level could go rogue, right? Are there any kind of bounds on state courts? But once we got before the Supreme Court, and let me be clear, there were some 45 plus amicus briefs on our side compared to a very paltry 10 or so on the other side that basically urged the court to look at this theory, the independent state legislature theory, as something that was a very dangerous threat to our democracy. And those amicus briefs came from the left and the right, from people who are, you know, friends like at ADL, as well as people who are founding fathers of the Federalist Society, right? So people on the, you know, on all sides of the political spectrum who are urging the Supreme Court to say, this case is such a potential dangerous threat to our democracy. It would unwind what we know and think of as the fundamental checks and balances in American government, right? The very thing that ensures that one branch doesn't go rogue, we don't have dictators, we don't have political coups, we don't have lawless lawmakers, because we've got this system of checks and balances built in. And I think once the Supreme Court heard those arguments, read the amicus briefs, and really thought about what was at stake, it was right that six of the Supreme Court justices said, hell no. Hell no, we cannot allow one branch of government to be absolutely and without any restriction able to exercise power when it comes to federal elections. That's just a no-go, because once we go there, then you are giving them the power to stay in office forever, to be able to shape and punish, shape laws that punish dissent, right? We go down the road of the Politburo. Right. And I think that the Supreme Court was right to reject that crazy theory.
I mean, but dangerous threat to democracy sounds right up the row of where these guys are. Because, look, I've been saying for a while that you've got people like the Federalist Society, you've got all these think tanks, you've got all this money going into these organizations to dream up the worst ideas possible. And this independent legislature doctrine, one of those bad ideas coming out of those think tanks. Again, there are a lot of these bad ideas. So I'm looking at this originally going, you know, I'm kind of concerned because this stuff generally goes slipping right through.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it didn't. So the question that I have is, you know, because I had a listener ask me the other day, you know, there have been a couple of voting kind of things coming out of the Supreme Court lately. Has the Supreme Court, or at least three of the conservative justices, had an about face, had a change of heart? Are we seeing a switch in time to save nine kind of scenario?
Yeah.
Where are we?
I think that only time will tell, right? We don't know whether this is a change that is a turning of a corner when it comes to the fundamental democratic principles that our country is based on. But what I like to believe is that it didn't take a lot for them to look at what's written in our U.S. Constitution, what's passed by Congress as federal laws like the Voting Rights Act, what's written in state constitutions to say, all right, while we may disagree ideologically on where to fall on many, many issues, there are some foundational stones that our country is based on. And if we start dismantling those things, we are, what, cutting off our nose to spite our face, right? I think just for that temporary political win, you will end up dismantling the very country that you think you are trying to gain power in. And so I think that the Supreme Court realized that in order to interpret history, precedent, the language of the Constitution correctly, what it had to do was take a step back from all of the political craziness, right? And I think that what they've seen is how far it will go. When you watch people storming Congress, right, with the flag as a battering ram, you realize that this is not a game anymore. You can't say yes to this kind of crazy idea and not expect that what you potentially are doing is opening it up to a total dismantling,
right,
of our country. And I think that in a lot of ways, this is the Supreme Court realizing they cannot go that far. And in the end, they are institutionalists, right? They want to preserve certain things. And I think that it's right that three justices who normally identify as on the right side of the column, right, conservative, would side with the liberal justices, because this is no longer about whether you are a Democrat or a Republican. This is about whether you're an American. And if you start dismantling those fundamental ideals that we have, you know, the thing that we all grew up learning in Schoolhouse Rock, right? There are three branches of government. Right. You need one that checks the other, right? Before you can pass a law, you know, the whole, what is a bill, right? And I really think that there was a revisit of what does this country stand for? And we cannot let that slide into an abyss simply for temporary political gain by one party.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Kathy Fang. Kathy's the Vice President of Programs at Common Cause, commoncause.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do and more information on this. So now this independent legislature doctrine,
yes,
it's now dead. So we don't even really have to go into how bad it would have been. It's now dead. My question now becomes, okay, this is now dead. What is the next bad idea? Because they never seem to stop. There's always something next. There's always, you know, more legislative action to put roadblocks between voters and the ballot box. There's always Texas trying to overturn elections that they don't like. There's always these things. What do you see as next?
Well, let's remember that the Supreme Court has dealt us quite a few blows when it comes to the kinds of protections that we have seen in the laws. Okay, so recently with the Voting Rights Act, we were all thrilled to death that the court left intact what's called Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act that says you cannot dilute minority votes, whether that's through the passage of restrictive voting laws or redistricting, right? But they did dismantle in an earlier case in Shelby County versus Holder in 2013, the protections against those kinds of very bad laws that would allow people to come into court and seek a protective order to prevent those bad laws from going into effect, so that you can run an election on a free and clean process without having to allow that bad law to go into effect. Now what has to happen is you allow the law to go into effect, you allow the bad effects to happen, and then you go to court, and which does take time, right? So that could be one election cycles or a couple of election cycles running under gerrymandered laws or restrictive voting laws. Those kinds of things still exist. And so what we may see is, and we continue to see, is number one, states pushing restrictive voting laws that take away the ability for people to access the ballot, to register to vote, to cast a ballot, by putting a million hurdles in front of them. The second thing that we're seeing is a real attempt by state legislatures to claw back the right of people to use the initiative process to protect rights, right? And so in Ohio and Florida and many other states, there is an effort to try to up the requirement to pass a ballot initiative from 50% or 55% to 60% or 65%, right? So just keep raising the bar so it becomes harder and harder to do things like create independent redistricting commissions, or protect reproductive rights, or protect other kinds of rights that the majority or the supermajority of voters want. But now we're going to make it super, super hard for people to be able to pass those laws in states that have the initiative process. Now, not all states have that process. Right. And so the last way that people had to protect their rights was to go to their state courts, right? And so the good news is that the Supreme Court has said, okay, we're not going to blow up that bridge. That path still exists for you. If you need to, that is a bridge that you can go to seek justice from the state court. Thank goodness, right? Because had they done that, that would have left half of the country without any redress when it comes to violations of their voting rights, violations of individual rights, right? When it comes to thinking about elections. So I think that the court has started to pull away. I hope they've turned the ship in a different direction, and they're starting to move towards understanding that there are some basic fundamental voting rights that cannot be eroded any further. And I think that the events that have happened recently, whether you want to think about the coup, that the attempted coup, you know, that happened on January 6th, or frankly, Supreme Court justices, you know, being found out to have accepted essentially bribes, yeah, right, in office. I have to think that Chief Justice Roberts is looking at that and saying that goes too far.
Yeah, no, I've been asking for a while.
I can't side with that anymore.
Yeah, I've been asking for a while. At what point does Roberts start thinking about his legacy and the history of the Roberts Court is going to be? Is it going to be billionaires having pet justices and, you know, maybe NASCAR robes? I don't know, but I got to believe he's thinking about that. And I got to think.
I think he is. And does he want to be associated with people who are going to be found guilty of violating not just ethical rules, but laws, criminal laws, right? And I think that we've got a situation where a couple of the justices on the conservative side have gotten themselves very much caught in a pay-to-play kind of system. And I think on the other side, you have a group of justices, and I like to think that Ketanji Brown Jackson is a breath of fresh air. And perhaps Chief Justice Roberts is saying, you know what? Maybe I need to rethink where I stand, because I want to stand on the side of right and justice and good, right?
Well, I wish I had your optimism.
I believe it. I believe it. And I believe that one day we're going to see photos of Chief Justice Roberts and perhaps Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson sitting on an elephant together, you know, exchanging good ideas, traveling the world, but expanding their minds, right? And really thinking about the world in a broader with a broader view. And I think that that is possible now that we are seeing that Justice Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, and Chief Justice Roberts are voting in a way that I think is much more thoughtful, right? And they're not just voting in lockstep with a certain ideological bent, the way that some people who have proven themselves to be bought and paid for, yeah, by special interests are doing.
So I guess we'll find out, won't we? I mean, because there are still some big cases to come yet.
There are some big cases. And I'm not saying that they've necessarily changed their ideology entirely. But I think when it comes to these types of cases that are fundamentally about rights that are enshrined in law and in the Constitution, I think that there has to be a line drawn that says we're not going to dismantle things that are written in law, things that are written in the Constitution, things that we've been practicing for 250 years or more, right, in the United States.
Well, either way, it is a good day for democracy. I'll take the win, or at least I'll take what, you know, this shouldn't have been even on the table. Again, it's one of those things I don't even know why they took, but I'm glad this time they're on the right side of history, and we'll see where things go. But as the horrible continues, I'd love to have you come back and share some thoughts. Appreciate the time.
Every once in a while, we have a little sunshine in July. It's a good way to go into July 4th to celebrate the things that we know America actually stands for. And that is freedom and democracy for all people, and not a cramped view of what those rights mean. And I think today the Supreme Court gave us something to celebrate.
I'm there with you. Kathy, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kathy Fang, she is the Vice President of Programs at Common Cause. Make sure you check out their website, commoncause.org. We'll get links out on social media. We'll take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come the talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1880. That was the day that Helen Keller was born in Tuscumbia, Alabama. 2 years later, she lost both her sight and hearing due to an illness. With the help of a teacher by the name of Ann Sullivan, Helen learned how to communicate again. Her inspiring story was retold in the play and movie, The Miracle Workers. Keller spent the rest of her life advocating for people with disabilities, as well as a woman's right to vote and a woman's right to birth control. But did you know she was also an outspoken supporter of the cause of labor? Helen was a socialist and a member of the Industrial Workers of the World Union. In 1912, Helen sent a check to support textile workers on strike in Little Falls, New York. She accompanied the check with a letter that captured her commitment to the labor movement. She wrote of the women out on strike, quote, "Their cause is my cause. If they are denied a living wage, I also am denied. While they are industrial slaves, I cannot be free. My hunger is not satisfied while they are unfed. I cannot enjoy the good things of life which have come to me if they are hindered and neglected. I want all the workers of the world to have sufficient money to provide the normal standard of living, a decent home, healthful surroundings, opportunity for education and recreation. I want them all to have the same blessings I have. I, deaf and blind, have been helped to overcome many obstacles. I want them to be helped generously in a struggle which resembles my own in many ways." Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Interesting story over at the newspaper of the investor class, the Wall Street Journal. It's amazing how they do this pitch of, you know, you should want to work till you die. You know, you should want to work from the day you're born to the day you die. And they point out in this article that people over 80 are working more. In fact, they're pointing out that they're the largest growing segment of the, their age group is the only group growing in labor participation. Everybody else is lazy. All of the younger groups are actually falling in labor participation. But the 80-year-olds, the octogenarians, they're growing. There's more of them in the workforce. In fact, they point out that about 650,000 people over 80 were in the workforce last year. They're saying that's about 18% more than just 10 years ago. So people are living longer. Evidently, this is the frame. People are living longer. They get bored in retirement. There's only so much golf you can do. There's only so much puttering around the house. They want jobs. They want to go to work. And look, there are some people, look, if they trot out a bunch of names, you know, they trotted out Harrison Ford, I guess, is over 80. They trotted out, you know, Jane Goodall, you know, some CEOs. You know what they didn't trot out? The bricklayer, the truck driver, the people who have to work to make ends meet. Didn't talk about them. And this, what this really is about, and it's a good puff piece. It's a good PR piece. It's like when they find an 80-year-old guy who's got to be a greeter at Walmart because he needs to make money to pay for his, you know, his prescriptions, or, you know, for his supplement to Medicare, or whatever, just to make ends meet because his retirement hasn't kept up with inflation. They always make it this wonderful puff. Isn't that wonderful? He's working. Oh, that's great. Look at him out there. Yeah. Look, I'm all in favor of people who want to work and you know, don't need to, and, you know, because it's what gets them, you know, blood flowing, all that. That's great. But I got to think, of the 650,000 people over 80 who are working, the story is not, oh, I'm bored. I'm not thinking that's it. I'm thinking, I didn't think I was going to live this long, and I didn't save enough, and now I've run out of money, and now I got to go back to work to be able to pay for the prescription drugs that have kept me alive this long. Because, again, we've got Republicans in Congress who will do nothing on prescription drugs. Because we're Americans. We pay full price. But this is another one of these moments where you go, they're pushing this idea that, you know, these people want to work longer. And you know what's coming next. The next sentence, the next puff piece is, you know, Americans, you know, they're putting off Social Security. They're voluntarily putting off Social Security until they're, you know, whatever. So it makes it easier for them to raise the Social Security age. So it makes it, well, you know what? People want to work longer. We're just giving the people what they want, which is insane. Because here's what we know. Social Security's got some problems. By, what is it, 2033, I think it is? They're going to have to start cutting back on benefits because we're going to start dwindling down on money. And the reason that we're dwindling down on money is not because baby boomers are retiring or people are taking advantage of the program that they've paid into. No, it's not that at all. It's the fact that there's not enough money. It's the fact that we've had a massive redistribution of wealth over the last 40 years. When Reagan did the whole, we're going to raise Social Security taxes enormously, 6.2% on workers and employers, because we got to get, how was it framed? We've got to get the pig through the python, because the baby boom generation was so large that we had to put money aside, so that you had to get the pig through the python. So we had to have this massive influx of cash to go into the program. And they did. What they didn't plan on, and this is the problem with where Social Security has a problem. Two things. We've got a cap on it, so rich people only pay so much. I think the cap's like $160,000. So if you make 20 gazillion dollars, if that's earned income, like going to work, you're only paying out 160 grand. Where someone who makes 100 grand a year pays every dime of their earnings into Social Security. That's a problem. We could scrap the cap, solve our problem just like that. The other problem, and the bigger problem, is the fact that in the 80s, a much larger share of wealth went to working people. You had much stronger unions. Wages were much higher for working people. They were. And you didn't have this all-out assault that happened Reagan forward on people's ability to get better wages, hours, and conditions. So as your wages have stagnated over these 40 years, you're not paying as much into Social Security. So back in the...
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swelling. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5